Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Well, it's all the talk in Portsmouth, architectural appropriateness. When discussing whether the new port walk is a monstrosity or whether the salt piles are a blight or the prospect of a skating rink at Strawberry Bank, one often hears the refrain, Miss Vaughn would be turning over in her grave. A new play explores the complicated life and legacy of Miss Vaughn, Dorothy M. Vaughn, known as the little old lady in the straw hat who led the charge to save Portsmouth's historic properties against a tide of post-war redevelopment. The Strawberry Bank Museum is celebrating its upcoming 50th anniversary with a new play about Vaughn, produced in conjunction with Kent Stevens Stage Force. Saving Portsmouth, the Preservation Crusades of Miss Dorothy Vaughn takes a deeper look at the woman who came to symbolize historic preservation in the port city, justifiably or not. And Kent Stevens wrote and directs the play. Kent, great to have you with us.
Great being here, Virginia.
And Leslie Pasternak, who plays Miss Dorothy Vaughn. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I should say Miss Dorothy Vaughn. It was very Miss at that time.
It was always Miss, yeah.
Indeed.
Well, until it was doctor, and she got her honorary doctorate from New Hampshire, from University of New Hampshire, for what she had done in starting the Strawberry Bank Museum.
But still, when people have these arguments about what's going on in the state of Portsmouth, people say, oh, Miss Dorothy Vaughn would be turning over in her grave. So who was Miss Dorothy Vaughn?
Miss Dorothy Vaughn is the person generally credited with delivering the one big public message through a speech that she did to the Rotary Club in the mid-50s, and she was the first woman ever to address the Rotary Club. This was at a time when women weren't even allowed to be members. And she's generally the one credited with waking up the city of Portsmouth to the economic potential, right, the cultural economy potential of preserving its own historic buildings.
And pretty far ahead of a lot of what was going on in the U.S. at the time, wasn't
it? Well, yeah. Ironically, not ahead of a lot of what was going on in Portsmouth. I mean, it had started in Portsmouth back in the 30s with John Mead Howells and Stephen Decatur. They had proposed creating a national park down on the waterfront, you know, and it had continued through other people's initiatives. But Dorothy was the person who, rightly or wrongly, and some people think wrongly, got the credit for lighting the fuse that really gave birth to all the preservation movements that have followed since then in the town and, you know, and to this day, the disputes that take place on whether you want to put a fence in front of your historic home and whether you want to build a skating rink down at Strawberry Bank Museum, you know, and we have a new dispute just about every week.
So this small woman in her pink suit and her straw hat is how she's described speaking to the Rotary Club. How did you, Leslie, approach her as a character?
Well, that's an interesting question. I come into it with a bit of a background as a historian myself, but I looked to Kent as a director, and he said, let me direct you, and it was marvelous. He really has tried to channel the spirit of Dorothy on the page, and so he reminded me, he said, we'll give you the wigs, we'll give you the suits, and let the writing guide you. And through the relationships, he's written very snappy dialogue, the relationships that she has with different people of different status and different functions in the city of Portsmouth at times, various times in her career.
Oh.
And so you find
so she gets has a different rhythm or
yes, you
voice.
Find who she is as she interacts with other people.
She was also the head town librarian.
She was head of the Portsmouth Library. She worked at the Portsmouth Library from the time she was a teenage intern until the time she retired. At age 72, they gave her an extra 18 months, even though mandatory retirement age was 70. So she worked at the library for 53 years.
Wow. And how did she get involved in historic preservation?
When her family moved to Portsmouth from Pinnacook, her dad, a semi-pro ball player, got a job working at the shipyard, and they lived in those row houses on State Street across from the John Paul Jones house. And there was a Ladies' Aid Society rolling bandages, you know, during the war. That would have been World War I. And she was interested in that house. She wanted to see the inside of that house. So she went over and she volunteered for a day to roll bandages. And all these ladies thought it was terrific that this young pre-teenager was going to help out with the effort, right? But, you know, she rolled a few bandages and then she snuck upstairs and stuck her nose through all the rooms. And she said later it was her first taste of colonial architecture.
Mm. And the colonial revival movement was pretty strong at this point?
Or? Well, Nutting, when was Wallace Nutting? I'm unsure. I think about the 20s. It was actually probably not yet, right? But it was coming. I mean, you know, the colonial revival was generally credited with starting with the Columbia Exposition in the late 1880s because the most popular thing there – I think I've got this right. I talk about it in another play, was a recreation of a colonial homestead and farm, right? It was the most popular attraction at the fair, and that kind of kicked off the colonial revival movement. But as we say in the play, the real colonial revival movement to some degree was ancestor worship. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right. All these immigrants had come in with their own customs and
right.
their own styles of building.
So it was definitely triggered by fear of outsiders, fear of immigration, the need to assert American values. Right. And there was a class level to it of we are now going to indoctrinate the newcomers into our American values. So this is how your houses should look. Right. You know, these are the things you should surround yourself with. Right. You know, I mean, it's the usual sort of culturalization process that happens, you know, with outsiders.
Mm-hmm. And she was largely responsible or let's say the face of getting Strawberry Bank Museum.
She became the face, and we talk about this in the play, because a lot of the other people who were the drivers of it, you know, people like Donald Margeson, who had the furniture store downtown, and, you know, and Jim Smith, who owned the Wentworth. A lot of them were also town councilors. So when it came to the town council needing to vote on the creation of the colonial village, a lot of those men had to drop off of the board of the colonial village in order to vote as town councilors for the project. So by default, Dorothy ended up becoming first voluntary president of Strawberry Bank, Inc., and she was their first president for about 4 years.
And she eventually built this empire. You know, she was sort of the woman behind the Portsmouth Library and behind Strawberry Bank Museum until she wasn't anymore. Well, tell us a little bit about her unraveling, Leslie.
Well, what has come through to me in the script and trying to find the emotional underpinnings that will help pull an audience through is that she did have this incredible affinity for the buildings and for the romanticized notions of the past, and indeed didn't have, it doesn't seem, a lot of real deep relationships with people. She had male mentors that she idolized. She was big on idolizing. And so in her quest to keep alive romantic notions, she stepped all over people sometimes with her opinions. And it feels as if, from what I take from Kent's script, she fell out of step with not only perhaps what was best for Portsmouth, but also what it really meant to have a museum that was documenting history, and that history and how we make it evolves, and the fashion of what it meant to have colonial recreations in Portsmouth moved on. And very well-educated people were brought in to professionalize Strawberry Bank, and that infuriated her. Mm. And so a large part of her downfall is apparently she felt she needed to remain the keeper of a lot of these objects. And so the best place to do that was in her own home, sneakily. And so this is part of what happened. So you see her, she lived for a very long time, Virginia. She was 99 when she passed. That's a very long time when you are an eccentric teenager to begin with, and all you care about is the taste of colonial architecture. She, you know, I've developed an affection for her, but someone said to me after the show the other night, they said, oh, your character was so marvelous. And I said, she may have been more marvelous on stage than she was to live with day in and day out.
Pretty complicated.
Yeah.
Do you have a little bit from the play? Can you set it up for us?
Absolutely. Well, this monologue Kent has woven into the play at a wonderful point where you have seen her clash with the new professionals who are taking over Strawberry Bank. Mm-hmm. And she is being, in a sense, evicted out of her role there. And so she does what she always does, which is grab the phone to vent to a girlfriend. And so I'll begin in the latter part of this monologue with a line that could be true today. She says, "Oh, you're right. It's all fights now. It's all dog eat dog. But, you know, I have a letter. How did I meet Mr. Lessem? It must have been through Mr. Appleton. I got a letter right in the middle of that nuttiness in 63. Were we going to get the Goodwin Mansion moved or not? That awful time when I hardly slept. I got a letter from Harold Lessem. He was just finishing up at Salem Maritime National Park. He's at Antietam now. But I still have it under the glass on top of my desk where I can see it every day. He said to me, he's talking about struggles, mine, his own. He says, above all, we learn that we must be stubborn, indefatigable, and immune to discouragement. In this respect, you stand out as a symbol of all these qualities. It's not about me. We built this for Portsmouth. We can't let it get taken away by snotty strangers who don't give a tinker's damn. Oh, I am not swearing. Plumbers would build a dam, no N, of dough to contain the solder, but after it was used once, it was thrown away. These people don't give a tinker's damn about Portsmouth."
And as the playwright, who is a character in the play, says, that etymology is totally whitewashed. Tinkers were forever hitting their thumbs with hammers, so a swear word from a tinker didn't amount to much. Of course, that revisionist history was what she was all about, mm-hmm. which is what drove the PhD historians crazy, you know, because she told these very old stories, very romanticized stories about Portsmouth history, many of which have been, you know, largely discredited since. But she kept telling them. She kept protecting that romantic vision of Portsmouth's past.
So it became true on some level.
Including the fact that the library building was not designed by Charles Bulfinch, the famous Boston architect, and they didn't take the sign down until after Sherm Pridham succeeded her as head librarian.
As complicated as she was, however, was she successful in helping Portsmouth citizens to really see their historic past and the value of that in economic terms?
I think she in her better moments credited the large number of people, and we try to do that in the script as well. You know, so many people who contributed to this idea of spreading the gospel of preservation. But by the very fact that she was as long-lived as she was and that she was head librarian and therefore to some degree controlled public information, she had a bigger megaphone than most people, right? And that megaphone broadcast that message constantly. The Portsmouth Public Library had a greater collection of works on local history than just about any library of comparable size in the country.
Wow.
It had only 16 books about biology.
So this the is most the recent world of which, according to Ms. Dorothy
The most recent
Vaughan.
Of which was a 1947 high school textbook. This was in the mid-70s, right? But it had this amazing collection on local history because of Dorothy.
Mm. And what would she think of the town now? It is no longer a working class town. A little precious, let's say. Very expensive.
Very expensive. And I think she tried to disguise her roots early, but it's very interesting. You know, we have a couple of scenes with her and the famous Evelyn Marconi. You know, Evelyn Marconi, of course, of Gino's Chowder House. She became a town councilor. She became assistant mayor. Her chowder house is to this day a great Republican stronghold. She was one of the strongest voices against forming Strawberry Bank. She and Dorothy became very tight in their later years, right? United, I think, by this concern about what was happening to the little people in Portsmouth, what was happening to the middle and lower middle classes. Was Portsmouth being – Portsmouth is essentially pricing certain classes out. So I think she would be even more concerned about that today than she was in her 80s and 90s.
Leslie Pasternak plays Miss Dorothy Vaughan in Saving Portsmouth, The Preservation Crusades of Miss Dorothy Vaughan. It is a co-production between the Strawberry Bank Museum and Kent Stevens Stage Force. Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thank you.
And Kent Stevens, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Virginia.
Kent Stevens wrote and directed the play, which has three remaining performances at the Tyco Visitor Center at Strawberry Bank this weekend. And as anyone knows who's been in those conversations about Port Walk, etc., there is plenty of drama in discussing development. There are more details on the play and showtime at wordofmouthradio.org. Stick around for more Word of Mouth. Up next, we're going to find out what happens when art, fashion, and technology collide. A dress that truly lights up a room when Word of Mouth continues.